You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Broadcasting live statewide from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who thinks chickens dream of one day being pot pies, Pete Schwabba.
Joining us now on the program, as he so often does, our friend Matt Miller. He's a Milwaukee film critic who does great work and is always a joy to read. You can check out his Substack at A Man About Film. Check out his work. He does good stuff there. And he joins us now over the stream on Nightlight. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing fantastic. A little tired. I'm still waiting for Adrian Brody's speech time.
We've chopped it up. We're getting through it. It's a mini series here tonight. It's unbelievable what he, and it's funny. It's ironic that he was in the longest movie in the history of mankind. And then he gives the longest speech too. So I love
it. And you know, I could almost grant it if he was like a surprise winner, like if he was, you know, not a betting favorite and, you know, he gets up there and he's like, he was somebody who was expected to be up there. It was between him and Timothy Chalamet. And B, he's been there before. Like,
right.
He won an Oscar before. This isn't new to you. So, I mean, it's a great performance. He's a worthy winner. But, boy, and you know what? No good speech has ever begun with the sentence, he threw his gum at his wife. You know, like that's.
Oh, is that
never...
what he threw? I didn't know. I saw him toss something.
Yeah, he would have gum. And instead of just swallowing it like a normal person, or I don't know, figuring out something, he like shucked it at his partner. And I'm just like, this is not a good start. This is not a strong start.
It would have been cool if he was like smoking a cigarette and he looked at her and said, keep this lit. But yeah, gum. I don't get that. That just doesn't.
I think it's officially by 1 second the longest speech in the history of the Academy Awards.
Is that true?
Which takes some doing.
Wow.
So good work, Adrian Brody. And the funny thing is, it's not like he had a lot of meaningful things to say either. We got to the end of that speech and we were like, the guys trying to, you know, make peace in the Middle East were able to wrap it up faster than
God,
you.
No kidding. Nuts. Yeah, he needed an envoy.
Nuts.
Yeah, it was strange because it was meandering. It's like, really? Like, and then he tells them to stop the music. I got to get through this. And like, he's a second time Oscar winner. That's probably what gave him the street cred to have them do that. But come on, dude.
Well, and like, you'd think when he was shushing the orchestra, it was like, oh, here's where he has like the heartfelt tribute to his parents or something. And instead it was just more rambling. It was one of the most bizarre parts of the night. And there was a random Wiz tribute in the middle of the night. So it was a fun night, but that was not one of the highlights.
All right. Before we get hardcore into this deep dive, I came down to the wire. The only film I was unable to see was I'm Still Here. I just don't live in an area where they showed it and it's not available.
Yeah, that was
to stream.
A late release.
Yeah.
That one just came out just a few weeks ago. Yeah.
Yeah. But I did see Nickel Boys and I did see The Brutalist. I wasn't a fan of The Brutalist. I love the story of Nickel Boys, but I thought the techniques they used, breaking the fourth wall and kind of how they told the story, took me out of it a little bit. I know some people love it. What is your take on those two films, Matt?
Yeah, I love Nickel. Nickel Boys would have been, if I was a person with a ballot, Nickel Boys would have been my best picture.
Nice.
I do get the kind of hesitance people have toward that movie. For people who don't know, it's a movie about two young black boys in a reform school, in a abusive, horrific reform school in Florida in the 1960s, based on the Colson Whitehead novel. And it's all told in first person mode. It is all told from the perspective of its two characters. And I think that works really well in that movie. I think it especially serves as a gut punch when you see, when they're older, you see that the camera is not first person, it is dissociated. It is seen from their backside. I think it's a very moving, emotionally well-told movie. But I understand it is a very strange movie. Like I said, a lot of technical craft is getting involved in that film, and it can be distancing for some people. For me, it was more immersive. But yeah, I'm amazed it got the Best Picture nomination over the likes of Sing Sing, which is a little bit more, conventionally uplifting and interesting and kind of conventionally, emotional. So I was happy. The nomination was the win there. And I respect The Brutalist. I think it's a mammoth production that they pulled that movie off. But for a 3.5 hour long movie, I really want to feel that movie and really come away being amazed. And the back half of that movie just doesn't come together for me in a way that I really walked out satisfied. But I can't not appreciate everything that went into making that movie. It's one maybe I respect more than I really love.
Well,
and I think that's why it didn't win much last night,
Yeah.
I think, other than Adrian Brody and Best Score, I think Brutalist was otherwise pretty much held out.
And in a weird way, and that's a great way to put it, I respect it too. And Adrian Brody was great. I just felt like it would have had a better chance if it were a true story. You know what I mean? I felt like kind of it was like, wait, now this guy's doing this, and now... I don't know. It just did not resonate with me, but it looked great. Adrian Brody was, all the actors were great. Felicity Jones was great.
I will say I like that it's not a true story. If you remember 3 years ago, there was that weird thing with Tar, the Cate Blanchett movie, where people were oh, is this a biopic? And everyone was like, no, this is a completely made up character. And that's what I had with The Brutalist, where I walked out and I was like, I got to read more about this architect. And then it was oh, he's not a real person. Right. But I think that speaks to the writing of that movie, that he feels so real in a lot. And the story feels so tangible. I think that's maybe the most impressive thing about the movie, is that it feels like it should be based on a real person, or at least that this is a true story that actually is, for the most part, just inspired by an architect as opposed to being truly a biography.
Right. And it's hard to argue with his win. Before we get into the awards, Matt, what did you think of the broadcast itself, the Oscars?
I thought it was a really good show.
Yeah,
I thought Conan O'Brien, this has got to be the first time in my lifetime that someone has hosted the Oscars and gotten rave reviews.
Yeah.
Normally, hosting the Oscars is the most hated job in Hollywood. It's a no-win scenario. Everyone thinks you did a bad job. The room is, awkward. Conan killed it. I think he did a very good job balancing, making fun of the room, making fun of himself. When it got to the why are we gathered here when the world is a mess portion of the night, I thought he delivered that really sincerely and well. I thought he did a good job of – I liked the pomp and circumstance of the show. I liked the kind of we're going to do a 10-minute, tribute to James Bond for no real reason.
What was that? That was crazy.
If Amazon didn't buy the rights to Bond and that franchise is doomed to become a shell of itself and MCU'd to death, I think I'd be more upset about that. But I appreciated it. I think – do you know the John Mulaney joke about making a birthday sign where it's like you start and you do a big old B and a big old I and a smaller R and you realize you're running out of room on the sign? Yeah. That's how last night's show kind of felt, where it was like in the beginning of the night, they really let people take their time and luxuriate. And you got these really fun speeches and emotional moments. And then as the night got on, clearly ABC was like, we got to wrap this up.
Yeah.
So more people started getting played off. And, it seemed like things were really kind of rushing to get to the end. But I thought it was a good show. I'm sure the ratings aren't going to be great. I don't think this was a show people were like, I got to see what's going on here. And we have to acknowledge that, these kind of shows are becoming more niche entertainment as opposed to general public entertainment.
Right.
That's fine. That is the way culture is going right now. But I thought it was a good show. And I think if the Oscars were smart, they should be like, Conan, here's a 10-year contract.
Yeah.
Keep doing this. You did great.
He was in Conan's already kind of awkward. I thought he seemed at ease as I've ever seen him hosting that broadcast. He was a natural to do that. I thought he pulled it off great.
He has that good insider-outsider energy where he knows what's going on. He knows how to poke fun at the industry while also seeming like an outsider, but also not alienating the people the way Kimmel can, or the way Ricky Gervais does, where Ricky Gervais just seems like it tends to run a little mean and a little self-satisfied about it. It's like, oh, I bet you've never heard this about yourselves. Right. Yes, they have, Ricky. They have the internet too. So I really liked Conan. I thought he had just the right tone, you know, and again, I'd be shocked if he doesn't come back next year. If he doesn't, I don't know what they're doing.
I hope he does too. And just to put a button on the broadcast itself, I love what they did with the fire victims, with the first responders. The sandworm thing was ridiculous, but kind of funny and just silly. So I like that.
Yeah, the one complaint I have, and this will be apparently my eternal complaint. Show clips of the movie.
Yeah.
Show the work. I don't need to hear Robert Downey Jr. use this big 5-minute flowery, you know, monologue to each of the nominees for Best Supporting Actor that I tune out of. Show the work that you are nominating and get people excited to see these performances as opposed to have someone just being like, oh man, that cinematography was so good. Show the cinematography. It's a visual medium.
Right. That's what we're doing here. Yeah. Mick Jagger was cool too. That was kind of fun when Jagger went out there.
And that's the vibe, I think, of the modern Oscars. You know, have celebrities come out and kind of just like seem like they're hanging out, being cool on stage. Like that was what the Oscars can be at their best. And I think what we need them to be. I thought last night it was that good combination of like relaxed and, you know, glamorous and luxuriating in its pomp. And I think that's a good combo we can move forward with.
I totally agree. My guest is Matt Miller. He is a Milwaukee-based film critic. Check out his stuff on his Substack at A Man About Film. We're breaking down the Oscars a little bit here. Let's jump in to the actual awards, Matt. Kieran Culkin started off the evening with a win. Your thoughts?
One of the weirder steamroll victories I've seen in a while. And we've seen some weird ones too, like Renee Zellweger winning for Judy, which no one has thought about that Oscar win in quite some time. I think he's very good in A Real Pain. I'm just amazed there was never seemingly any competition. And I kept waiting for that to happen. You know, when Real Pain missed out on Best Picture nomination, I was like, okay, maybe this is Ed Norton's time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we start getting into the award ceremonies and his speeches are kind of awkward and rambling. And you're like, okay, well, maybe this will be, you know, Guy Pearce in The Brutalist. Maybe people will move towards him. Never happened. People just really like him, like his persona, liked that performance in the movie, which I think is fair. It's a good performance. And that movie crumbles if that performance isn't perfect.
Are you talking about Kieran Culkin now or Guy Pearce?
Kieran Culkin.
Okay, right.
Like if Culkin's performance is not pitch perfect in terms of being a charming jerk, like being a guy you hate that you have to be related to, but also you get why people like him, that movie falls apart. That movie is unwatchable. You know, that movie is a Sundance movie no one ever speaks of ever again. And instead, you know, it became the movie it was. So I appreciate the win. But yeah, I'm kind of amazed that it never faced any resistance this entire year.
My whole thing was like with that was I felt like he was doing his character from Succession too. Like he's so good at that. It's so natural to him. I felt like Guy Pearce, I wasn't expecting him to win, but when I just saw The Brutalist yesterday, and Guy Pearce is one of my favorite actors. I thought he was great. Loved Ed Norton. Jeremy Strong, I did not see The Apprentice. Borisov was good in Anora. It could have gone any way in that of those nominees, at least.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Boris.
Yuri Borisov, I think.
Yeah, in Anora, which obviously is a movie they loved, and he becomes a very big part of that movie by the second half. Ed Norton, he's the heart of A Complete Unknown. And I agree. I think Guy Pearce is really, this is he's fun in The Brutalist. The way he plays this kind of, you know, aloof, hyper billionaire, you know,
but passionate guy. I was trying to figure his character out the whole movie. That was my favorite thing maybe about that, in addition to Adrian Brody's performance.
I think all the thing with all the winners this year is that pretty much all of them I have no problems with. This was a really strong year of winners that I'm like, good for you. Like even Zoe Saldana, I don't love Emilia Perez, I don't love that performance, but listen, Zoe's been putting in good work for years in really big stuff. She took a big swing in this movie. She's probably the best performance in that movie. So, yeah, that's fine.
Let's pick up there when we come back after a very short break. Matt Miller is here helping us break down the Oscars. We'll get into some of the other awards when we come back. And then Mark Hansen is here at 7:35, the musical theater chair at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. You won't want to miss that as well. It's Peach Wabba and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Anna in Madison, she's in the 608, says, Pete, Adrian Brody's girlfriend is Harvey Weinstein's ex-wife. Wow. Talk about, yeah, they split up in 2018. Talk about a rebound. So if she's married to Harvey Weinstein, getting a chunk of gum thrown in her direction is probably a highlight of her day, I would imagine.
That is not great.
That is not, no, and well, whatever. I mean, that's a shock. Thank you, Anna, for the text. And then, where are we here? Conrad, I'm lost. Oh, there we go. Joshua from Wausau says, Pete, this is good. Pete, how about awards? I watched The Godfather of Green Bay a couple months ago. Good movie. Made me laugh, but it deserves an award for the number of times the Macarena is played in a movie. Yeah. Most people probably wouldn't argue with their Joshua. We paid handsomely for that title. We wanted to get our fair use out of it. Matt Miller is here. We're breaking down the Oscars. Matt, what? So you're okay with Zoe Saldana. That's another category I thought could have gone. I would have been happy with anybody that won. I thought they were all great. I will say Emilia Perez, the more distance I have from it, the more I dislike it for some reason.
Yeah, I think it's funny because I talking to people in my Oscar watching room and people I was texting with, one of the big takeaways was, oh, that movie looks interesting. I want to like everyone wanted to watch that movie. But I think the thing is, Emilia Perez is best watched in 10-second clips. Like that movie is so out of control and so many, you know, impulses not being reined in and a lot of people taking big swings that maybe don't work. Especially across a 2-hour time frame.
It was a mess.
I can respect the swings it's taking, but it is not a movie I particularly, it was the least of my, of the nominees I thought this year.
Same. And what I don't understand is I don't think the Twitter scandal even hurt them. I think they were lucky to win two. I don't know that that really hurt them in the long run.
I think even as like, I think that probably was the death knell for that movie, but I think it was as soon as it got that many nominations, because people forget it was only one nomination away from tying the record for most nominations for a movie ever.
That's crazy.
I think, you know, the front runner's curse hit it, you know, it got all those nominations and people were like, do we like this movie that much? I don't think so. And people backed away from it and they found other places to go. And obviously Anora was that case, especially in terms of best picture.
So let's talk about, we talked a little bit about Adrian Brody. Was that an upset or who would you have given it to, Matt?
It's hard to say. I would have given it to the woman, Fernanda Torres, in I'm Still Here, the Brazilian movie. I think that's a really fabulous performance in a very good movie. I wouldn't call that an upset. I know a lot of people in the aftermath were like, oh, Demi Moore, looks like Hollywood didn't learn the lesson from The Substance.
Who did I say? I was talking about Adrian Brody, but maybe you thought I meant Emilia Perez. But I was asking if you thought Adrian Brody... who would you have given Best Actor to?
Oh, Best Actor. I would have, oh boy. In that category, I'm trying to remember who's all in there.
You got Timothée Chalamet, Coleman Domingo.
I think I would have given it to Chalamet. I think he's pretty great in that movie. And I think, and of the nominee. Oh no, Coleman Domingo in Sing Sing. Never mind. I forgot he's nominated. He's tremendous in Sing Sing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Coleman Domingo's going to be accepting award at the Oscars within the next 5 years.
I agree.
He's putting out great work. He is really liked in Hollywood. I think if he finds the right movie and it gets the right push, that's a done deal. You know, it's like Paul Giamatti with The Holdovers. You know, give him one more movie and that man is going to have an Oscar.
So funny you say that, because Coleman Domingo, you're right, he is... I watched the first spinoff of The Walking Dead, Fear the Walking Dead. I stuck with that kind of because of him. He plays a scoundrel, and I still liked him. Like, the guy just has that quality. He's got that great voice. He's a good actor. For whatever reason, people love him. So you're probably right about
he's
that.
He's great. He's instant gravitas on screen. Like, he's got, you know, to bring it to current events, like, he's got kind of Gene Hackman energy, where it's just like, guy shows up on screen, and he feels like a lived-in person immediately.
That's really interesting. Okay, so Coleman Domingo, but yeah, I'm with you. I can't argue. Adrian Brody was great. Let's turn to actress. I have to say, I don't know how you feel about The Substance. I hated it. Another movie when I get distance from it. No thanks. And Demi Moore was good, but everyone was acting like it was a slam dunk, and I'm like, there's some other great performances here too. I didn't think what she did. I've seen her act in other better films, I think.
Yeah, and I was getting to this point where, you know, this morning everyone was like, ooh, it looks like Hollywood didn't learn the lesson from The Substance. They gave a new young starlet the award instead of a woman who's aging. And I just want to be like, are we forgetting that The Substance is an insane movie? Are we forgetting that The Substance is one of the wildest movies to ever receive Best Picture nominations from the Oscars? That movie is gross and violent and in your face at all times. The fact that Demi Moore was in the running is a victory all in itself. I really like that movie. I think that movie's, you know, outlandish and wild. And I'm not surprised at all that the Oscars in the end were like, yeah, this movie's too big, too weird. And if they loved Anora as much as they obviously did, they gave it Best Picture. They gave it, I believe, 5 Oscars at the end of the night.
Six crazy.
Oscars at the end of the night. They clearly liked Anora a lot. How do you give Anora Best Picture and not give Anora Best Actress?
Great
so I think, and you know what? Mikey Madison is tremendous in that movie. That's another performance where that movie doesn't work without
her. She carries it. Absolutely.
Yeah. The movie is at its worst when she falls out of the movie in that kind of middle section. But when she is the centerpiece of that movie is very good.
Yeah. Peach Wabba and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I remember there was a radio was coming from the room next door. My mother laughed the way some ladies do. When it's late in the evening and all the music's seeping through.
He can't not play along, folks. Paul Hanna is here in the studio. I heard you were a big Kiss fan. I did
huge
my research. And
yes.
I want to tell you that my first album I bought when I was a kid was an album called Machine Head by Deep Purple.
Yeah.
And I walked to Sears in my neighborhood in Chicago. Me and my brother probably had no business being that far away from home, but just to buy Deep Purple. And that was my second album I owned, was Destroyer.
Yeah.
So I love that I found out that you were a huge Kiss fan. And I haven't listened to much in recent years, but you got to play with them.
I got to play with Ace, I think it was like 3 or 4 times, and then Gene I did one show with. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
And Ace is your idol, right? Or it was when you were younger?
Yeah. Growing up, he was such an influence. Watching him, when I'd see those videos as a kid, it just ruined me, you know? Like, I'd see him, I'm like, I gotta do that. I gotta be that guy.
That's so great. I remember as a kid, too, like, some kids in the neighborhood were like, thought they knew it all. And so we hear Kiss, and they go, Ace Frehley or Jimmy Page? There'd be Ace Frehley over here. None of them knew anything about what they were talking about,
but
they just love their guy, you know?
Yep.
So Paul Hanna is here. He is a Northeast Wisconsin-based singer-songwriter, and he's the front man for the band Annex.
Correct.
And he is in the studio right now with his guitar, and he's going to play something for us, which is so fantastic. What are you thinking, buddy?
Awesome. I'm going to do a song called New Morning. I wrote this song with one of my best friends, Chad Reisliger, and it was super funny because we used to, back in the day, you know, we'd trade off cassette tapes, but now you can text ideas. He was actually in India when we wrote this song.
Oh,
so
wow, nice.
We were going back and forth, and he was across the world. So it's pretty neat.
Fantastic. All right, what's it called?
It's called New Morning.
New Morning, Paul Hanna on Nightlight.
Is it over?
New Morning?
New Morning.
Love it. How old is that song? Is that something new? Or
That's it's not super, super new.
Okay.
Maybe, I don't know, 6, 7 years, something like that, maybe?
So we talked about Ace Frehley.
Yeah.
I know you've played with Cheap Trick and those guys. You can obviously really rock. You also list Don Felder as one of your influences. I think you did in one of your, or you played with him.
I played that show, yeah.
Interviewed with Frank Hermans. This was kind of more of a cool, almost sounded like you can't always get what you want type. What's your choice to play? Do you like to headbang? Do you like to play it more chill? What's your favorite stuff to play?
I just love melody. Yeah. So if it's rocking and there's a melody, I'm in. Okay. If it's mellow and there's a melody, I'm in.
Was there a moment like when you started? I think you said, I read something that said you were like 9 years old when you started playing the guitar or something.
Yep.
Was there a moment where you were like, I have to play that? I have to learn how to do that? Were you watching someone? Did someone put it in your hands?
My mother took me to see the movie La Bamba, and I will never forget.
Nice.
I will never forget it for as long as I live. When
you got to find that song, La Bamba.
Yeah. So great. when I was younger, my mom took me to see that movie, and I'm sure the week before I said I wanted to be an astronaut or I wanted to be a lawyer or a doctor or whatever I was going to say that week. But after that happened, I looked at my mom and I said, I want a guitar and I'm going to do that, because I watched everyone. They just freaked out. And that song, for some reason, it hit me. It affected me.
It's one of those songs that when it comes on, no one goes, oh, this again. They just love it. It's like iconic, you know. That's so cool. You were talking about Tommy's Benefit before.
Yes.
Do you want to just, in case people just tuned in, tell us what that is again and where they can find out more information about it? Because I don't know that we covered that.
So we are now linked in with the Greater Green Bay Community Foundation, which is, they've got their website. And you can hop on that with, and there's a link that you can find the Tommy, it's called the Tommy Foundation. We've been doing this since 2003. He passed on June 14th of 2003. And since then, we've been doing, we used to do it around, there was a couple different shows that we did, but now we do it right around his birthday, which lands right around, it's right around Thanksgiving. And we've been doing it consecutively. I mean, COVID threw a wrench at that year, and there was a couple that we weren't able to do when I was touring with Hairball and such, but the event has gone, you know, every year, and we essentially, I don't want to ruin the surprise too much, but we get these kids to come up and jam, and they're usually very young children, you know, they're kids, and they come in, and we find students that necessarily maybe their parents can't afford to get them a brand new Les Paul or a new drum set. And we have those instruments up on stage. They think they're just coming up to play. And then that night they walk away with a new drum set or a new guitar. But we give away all that stuff in front of, right around, 1,500 people. So it's pretty cool. Yeah.
That's really cool. I'm a novice. I own a guitar I've had for 40 years. It's an old beat up Applause. So I don't know anything about guitars. So forgive me if I got this wrong, but I was reading an article about you, and it sounded like you said you picked up a Les Paul. But the way the article was written, did you learn on an electric guitar or acoustic?
So my first guitar I ever got was a nylon string Harmony that my parents got from Mecca Music here in Green Bay when they were still open. And I got that for Christmas, and I played that for quite some time. Yeah. And then I switched to an electric. Excuse me. I always say to people, they should start out on acoustic.
Right.
Get used to playing quote unquote cowboy chords and learn, the fundamentals to what the guitar kind of is. And then when you get an electric, it's a completely different beast. It really is.
Those are killers on your nylon strings. Like those will give you like, callus is worse than steel strings, right?
I feel like I feel like the nylon string is more kind of like, it's got fishing line, for the top three strings. They have a different tone completely, but when you get into the phosphor bronze, like an acoustic, they'll rip your fingers right apart.
You talked about Epic Riverside. Do you have a favorite, like if you could play one gig in the Green Bay area or Northeast Wisconsin, where would it be? What venue do you absolutely love?
I feel like I've been very blessed. We got to play the Brown County Arena, which is where I saw my first rock concert ever. I got to play the Resch. I opened up for Ted Nugent and Styx and REO when they were there. I did a solo thing for that. But Epic is, they all kind of have their own thing. You know, the Russia's so big and so ginormous, it's very intimidating, to say the least. But Epic is laid out so well. I just have, it's tough not to go with Epic, but it's such a great venue.
All
and I've
different
had a lot of shows. Yeah,
ways.
Exactly.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite band that you like to watch a lot? Like when you're out in the town and you see someone's playing, who are you like, oh, I gotta go see them?
As far as local?
Yeah, just local, Northeast Wisconsin or Wisconsin in general.
I'm a big fan. There's a band from Milwaukee called the Delta Routine. They're an original band. They're fantastic. I actually got to run sound for them down at Mill Creek back in the day, and they were excellent. Delta Routine.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. So you met, I didn't want to forget this because I wanted to ask you, when you met Ace Frehley.
Yes.
Gene Simmons.
Yes.
And you had them probably on a pedestal most of your life. What was that meeting like? Sometimes we don't want to meet our idols. Were they cool? Did they disappoint? Tell me.
There was a funny story about the day that I met Ace Frehley. So I did an interview with, I got some good friends that work at APL too, and they ended up doing an interview, and they had Ace on. They brought up my name for this, talking about how we were opening up. So Ace acknowledged it, right? And he talked about, they said Annex, and they're going to be, he's like, oh, they're going to open up, blah, 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 blah. And it goes on and on. Well, I was told that some guitars they went missing that day of the show. So the tensions were really high.
Yeah.
And then I remember I could hear through the walkie talkies that, through the radios, they said the guitars are found. They're on their way to the venue. Immediately you heard everybody, right? Well, I have a Gibson Les Paul Ace Frehley custom. It's his signature model. And I ended up getting that years back, and being such a Kiss fan, He rarely signs guitars. It's a big deal for him to sign a guitar. And when we did that show, the promoter Ryan Vandersand pulled me aside. He said, "Come on in." And Ace is just sitting in there, and it was just me and Ace. And I was terrified, just shaking.
Right.
He signed my guitar, came up, and he introduced himself to me, saying, "Oh, hey, I'm Ace." And I was just like, You know, I didn't want to say like, I know,
yeah.
But yeah, it was fantastic.
Kind of disarming in a way, like that he was so normal.
He'll never be normal in my eyes. Not, he's a space ace. He's like superhero to me, right?
All right, Paul Hanna is here in the studio, local guitar badass. I think that's what we could call Paul, or if you have something better, I'm fine with that too. But he's going to play something when we come back. I'll finish reading your text, and we will wrap this thing up. This is Pete Schwabba and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
And I try to make the midnight show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
All right, Con, make sure I don't skip a text here. Craig Knitt checks in on the stream and says, Mad Max, The Road Warrior, and Clint Eastwood as the Man with No Name, the Western Trilogy. Yeah, that's a great one, too. Fistful of Dollars. I couldn't even name the whole trilogy right now, but that's a great one. And then Steve from Florida says, favorite movie character, Rocky Balboa, and TV show character, Barney Fife. Oh, those are great, too. Thank you, Steve. Well, your dad and I were totally on the same page last night.
Yes.
I think we could pal around. Annie from Watertown says, $3.99 on Vimeo. Steal big, steal little. Thank you, Annie. Check it out. Todd Alba's favorite. That was his popcorn pick of the week tonight. And then Steady Eddie chimes in and says, Pete, concerning your missing shirt, sometimes a shirt will run away from home if it feels neglected. I'm not judging you, Pete, but try leaving a small saucer of fabric softener on your back porch. In a few days, I think your long-lost rag stock, wow, he listens hard, your long-lost rag stock will find its way back home purring like a kitten. Favorite movie character, Humphrey Bogart, Rick in Casablanca. That is awesome. Of all the radio stations in the world, I tune into your show, Mr. Schwabba. Here's looking at you, Pete, and Conrad on YouTube. Is that Eddie watches on YouTube?
I guess so.
I guess so. He's referencing my shirt. So, who was that masked man in the pink tutu with the cowboy hat, Steady Eddie? That was the one and only Todd Alba. That was a blast. And then Jack, finally from Miramax, says, my favorite movie character is Brett Maverick, as played by James Garner. I realize that's really a TV character, but Garner also played Maverick's pappy in the movie. He did a great job with both. Yes, he did, Jack. Jack from Miramax. I have not seen that movie in so long, but I did see it. Everybody, thank you for the texts. Thank you to Todd Alba tonight. And thank you to my guest who is in the studio with me right now, helping me close things down here. Paul Hanna, this is fun, man. Great to have you here.
It's great to be here. Thanks again.
What do you like? Obviously, you've had your band Annex forever.
Yep.
Was it weird the first time you thought, I got to do something different? I'm either going to play with another band or do a solo thing, or do they get weird about it, or do they know everybody needs to do that and you're coming back, or what?
When I didn't stop anything with Annex. The only time that I was exclusively gone was when I was with Hairball, because it was such a, I mean, that was a serious tour where we were gone pretty much for almost 6 months straight in a bus. So, I mean, it was that I had to cancel my whole summer for, but when I was with Flip, that was an original band, and we played, we didn't play a ton of shows, but, the shows that we did do were very memorable.
Yeah.
And they were one of my favorite, they were up there as far as one of my favorite bands that I've ever loved.
Yeah.
And to be asked to join this band was a huge honor for me.
That's excellent. I got two more quick questions for you.
Of course.
Then you're going to play us out. And I love that. You said in an article I read that Les Paul guitars are so rock and roll and so meat and potatoes. What does that mean? What does meat and potatoes mean as it pertains to guitars?
Well, in the 80s, there was a guy that made a whammy bar system, and it's called the Floyd Rose. And it's what Eddie Van Halen used, where they could do the dives.
Oh, yeah, right.
They could dive all the way down, and all these, there's a bunch of different companies that made all this stuff. There's, you know, there's guitars where you can tap, you know, the humbucker to make it a single coil pickup, or there's a, you know, there's a lot of stuff that you can alter, you can do underneath the hood, right? To me, Les Pauls, they're using the same technology that they did from the 50s.
Right.
Because it works. It's just a chunk of wood that sounds fantastic with some good pickups. It gets the job done.
All right, last question for you. We were talking before about kids in my neighborhood saying, Ace Frehley, Jimmy Page, and none of them knew what they were talking about. You know what you're talking about. Who's the greatest guitarist if you had to pick someone of all time?
Oh, that's a tough one. I am,
I didn't mean to.
I don't
know. Give me one of them.
I'd struggle with that because I feel like there's so many different. I mean, Stevie Ray Vaughan is up there for doing what he did, the Texas-style blues. He killed it. Like, he was the one that was a monster.
Lover Boy is one of my favorite tunes of all time.
So, yeah. And I think that there's, one of my favorite bands of all time is called Dada, and they're from California, but they're just a monster trio, and that guitar player's name is Mike Gurley. He's a fantastic player, and he's a huge influence on me with that too.
That's interesting. Maybe guys we've never even heard of that you have because you're in the mix. So, all right, I wanna close this down because I really want you to play again. And thank you again for bringing your guitar.
You.
Paul Hanna's gonna play us out. Thank you to my guests. Thank you for all the texts. Good night, Wisconsin.
Thanks for having me. This one's called Under. To compromise.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.